Worth Repeating is made possible thanks to the support from the 80/20 Foundation, the Lifshutz Foundation, and Pasha Mediterranean Grill.
Some of the stories may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to the Worth Repeating podcast. I'm Tori Poole. This is the second part of the live storytelling event recorded at the Irma and Emilio Nicolas Media Center at Texas Public Radio in downtown San Antonio. The theme was Gonzafos. From family traditions to creative expression, these stories celebrate the memories we keep safe and hold dear. What is a family tradition that you hold dear? Our next storyteller is Roberto Livar. Roberto shares a story rooted in San Antonio that you can't mess with.
My name is Roberto Ibáñez Livar. I am a singer, songwriter, band leader, father, husband, not necessarily in that order. But I'm also a native San Antos son. If you know me for my time in front of Bombasta, you might know me as El Robótico. C/S Gonzafos. It's like a seal, right? A stamp. Now I think back, and maybe one of the first times I saw it was riding down the south side summer streets in the back of my dad's pickup truck, seeing it at the bottom of a mural. Or maybe it was on the side of the wall of the Tiendita Limons on the corner in the neighborhood right there. Somebody's name with Gonzafos underneath. Written like a challenge. Yeah. I think it was actually sealed in Sharpie on the bus stop Barrio Lover's testimonial that El Giggles, E Shy Girl, forever's Gonzafos. Gonzafos seemed to permeate my life and my expression early as a kid growing up on the south side here in San Anto. You know, really, before even really knowing what it represented. You know, how do you pass on meaning to little Chicanito before Google searches and, you know, urban dictionaries? I remember being a little south side dirty, you know, long hair, black t-shirt, concert t-shirt, torn jeans, boots, doodling on my buttercrust book cover, band names, maybe the Lowrider magazine logo, and always Gonzafos. I remember being a younger version of myself and asking my mom, who's been my translator through life, but what does it mean? What does Gonzafos mean? And she thought about it, chose her words carefully and wisely. Finally, she replied back, well, it means can't fuck with this. My mom's always been very direct and outspoken, as you can tell. And she went on to go and explain to me that that little C and S after, you know, that it was a sign of treating things with respect, right? That when it was on the bottom of a mural, it was so that all the little taggers in the hood would respect that mural. They would know it was from here. It was rooted here. It's from us. Respect, Gonzafos. When it was at the bottom of somebody's name painted on the side of the wall, it was like a tilma, like protection. And it was about bearing witness to somebody being up on the wall for the world to see. Respect. Earned. Demanded. From here. You know, toda la familia de todos, you know, all my family, we're puros tejanos. Right? We've been zoot suiters and rancheros. We've been trabajadores and truckers. We've been campesinos and bikers. And we've crossed this South Texas lands for generations before the border crossed us. From here, rooted. Respect. Gonzafos. So, you know, I took a lot of that, right, as an artist, as a musician, that history, the ideas of respect taught to me by my elders and passed on, hopefully passed on to my children, and try to create something, some form of expression as a musician. And I'm really fortunate, I really am. I get to make sounds and vibrations, create opportunities for people to come together with, honestly, the best musicians I know. Very fortunate. You know, a long way from that little, Chicanito on the south side, first gig at Club DMZ on Couples way back in a while ago. And I've been able to share the stage with some legends and people, personal idols, and be considered, you know, an equal and a peer and blessed that way. And so much of what I've tried to do is kind of lean into that, right? Carry a little bit of that respect, the gonzafos, and in both the music and the expression that we create, and also respecting the audience's attention. Because your attention right now is sacred. Your attention right now is a gift, and I thank you for that. And as an artist, it's not something to be squandered, right? We can use this moment to connect, build awareness, plant seeds. And I've seen it, you know, I've had the band going for over 20 years representing San Anto here already. And I've seen those seeds grow. You know, I think a lot about how a lot of Raza communication is coded. It's innuendo. It's under the surface, right? And that's like gonzafos. If the message isn't meant for you, it'll be right in front of your face. You'll never see it. But if you're meant for the message, it'll resonate as soon as you see it, as soon as you feel it. And so that's just where we've been at. But as an artist in this, it's hard. And to be completely honest with y'all, I'm vulnerable with you. It's the hardest it's ever been right now. Because that fascism seeks to suppress that voice. And I'm fighting through that. And that's why we got to hold on to these little notions like gonzafos to remind ourselves of the power within. So, thank you. Peace. Gonzafos.
This podcast is proudly supported by the 80/20 Foundation, dedicated to creating opportunities through education, community outreach, and meaningful impact. For this and more information, visit 8020foundation.com.
Our next storyteller is Isabel Payel. Isabel shares a story about the heart it takes to leave a mark.
It is the early 2000s, and I'm a very small child. I'm sitting in the back seat of my dad's truck, and all the divas are on the radio. Kelly Clarkson, Alicia Keys, my personal favorite, Mariah Carey. And I can't help but sing along. I've always been moved by music for as long as I can remember. And so as my toddler self is singing the words "Till We Belong Together" as if I know anything about love or heartbreak, my dad would do this thing, which I'm sure a lot of other people's dads did this to them. He would reach over to the stereo and shut it off. And while I'm singing my heart out, I'm humiliated. I'm crying because I can't take a damn joke. And my dad thinks it's hilarious. And while I forgive him for these instances, because he did it more than once, I believe that this moment created the most introverted and shy performer that is here before you tonight. I've been asked before what it feels like to be moved by music, and for some reason that was really difficult to answer. But the best way I can describe it is that it doesn't leave me alone. When I close my eyes to go to sleep, these melodies will trickle in my head and I forget them in the morning. Or I'll be at HEB and the Diana Ross song is playing in the store and I'm trying to find harmony to whatever I hear. And I even wrote the first line to my most recent single called There You Go when I sat down to use number one in the bathroom. So that's what I mean when it doesn't leave me alone. Music has been there for me throughout everyday life, always. I started playing music in town by the name Chavela about 7 years ago. And a lot of my first songs were written, a lot of my first shows were played towards the end of my high school years. But when the pandemic hit, that all came to a stop. And I think for a lot of artists and creatives and musicians, we were really excited. I mean, it was a weird time in the world, but we had so much time on our hands to create and connect with the world online. But I did the opposite. I was very discouraged. I was very lost. My inspiration and motivation came from connecting with people through live music, and we couldn't do that anymore. And so because of that being taken away, I felt lost and I didn't know what my next step was. And my ex-partner at the time, who was also a musician, was something we did together, I think felt the same stagnancy. And his solution was to enlist in the U.S. Army. And while I didn't agree with that, I was young, misguided, I saw that as an opportunity to run away from my problems. And when he got his final orders, I followed him, and we found ourselves in a courthouse in El Paso exchanging vows written for us by the state. And I was married at 21. And I felt sick. I own that. I know that I didn't know what I was doing, but I knew that I was leaving a lot behind, and it wasn't for me. And after 10 really long, depressing, and lonely months, I decided to choose myself and I left. And I was riddled with guilt. I felt very selfish, but I had to move on. And when I got back to San Antonio with very little to no money, I decided to get my band back together. And I told myself I was going to record my first album, finally. Thank you. So got the band back together and we kind of hit the ground running. We played a lot of amazing shows right off the bat. Some of them were in here in this room at TPR. La Semana Alegre made its comeback with the city and we got to play that. We played just 2 months after Stable Hall opened. But there was also some lows. I, you know, had to play more solo gigs, working gigs to very empty hotel bars. There was this one time I was playing as a duo in Legacy Park to like five people in the cold. And this homeless man wearing a Bud Light t-shirt started crawling up to our space. And I was like, what's going on here? And then this harmonica appears and he started playing along. And I don't believe it was in the same key. But I am not a confrontational person. So I'm over here making my bandmate like try to, you know, get him to get out of there. And I felt bad. I think he just wanted to play along, but you know, I didn't know what to do, and I wasn't going to get through that song without laughing my ass off. So it's a lot of interesting gigs, but after several years and possibly thousands of dollars, I, you know, over that time was able to fund and finish recording my album. And when it was finished, it just didn't feel right to release the album without doing this one thing that you don't see often in the music scene, which I wish we did. It's kind of difficult to approach, but I think my album deserved to be released on vinyl. And so after sitting with these recordings for over a year, I finally was able to fork over that money, make a deposit, and I sent those recordings to a vinyl pressing company in Dallas, Texas. And it was a very nerve-wracking journey. It was smooth for the most part, but my vinyl was not ready for pickup until 1 week before my album release show. But I did it. I got to Dallas and I bust opened that box, and in this saran wrap was my profile on this 12-inch sleeve, and I was holding 180 grams, not the cheap shit, not the 140, 150. I got the heavy stuff. It lasts longer. Go big or go home. And I was holding my debut self-titled album, Chavela. I was able to secure a headlining spot at Stable Hall to celebrate the release of the album, and I was getting email updates every day of the ticket count, which is so nerve-wracking. And that morning, I got the final, what I thought was the final email and count, and it said 97 tickets sold. And I was like, I'll take it. You know, that's a lot of people, right? So we had a beautiful night, beautiful party, playing all the songs in their entirety. And the next morning, I got the final email with my money and also the ticket count, and I actually sold 200 more tickets at the door. So 300 people total were there celebrating with me. It's just classic San Antonio shit. You always buy your tickets last minute. You don't know what that does to our confidence leading up to our events. So I hope you got your tickets on time for this. But I did it, and I was so excited to celebrate with my family. They were front row with me. They were so proud of me. But most importantly, I was really proud of myself. My album was made with love and heartbreak, blood, sweat, and tears, Gonzafos, with pride, and I can't wait to do it again.
This episode is proudly supported by the Lifshutz Foundation, a San Antonio-based charitable foundation committed to strengthening communities through philanthropy and support for meaningful causes. For this and more information, visit directory.tpr.org.
Our last storyteller is Fernanda Rios. Fernanda shares a story about a transformative moment rooted in history.
Folclorico came into my life when I needed it the most, but I didn't know I needed it. Have you ever found yourself in that deep, deep, dark hole where you don't know how to get yourself up from bed, where everything during the day seems pointless, where there's no use to your life or to getting up or moving along? Well, that was me, and it happened. But Folclorico came along and saved me. My first performance ever was at the best stage, the best place, and I couldn't have asked for better. It was at McCallican Canyon back in El Paso, Texas. And El Paso is very special. But the best thing about El Paso are its sunsets. Yeah, sure, Switzerland might have good sunsets. I bet the beach is pretty comfortable. But El Paso is special. It has this cool summer breeze, even though it's in the middle of the desert, that just hugs you. And these colors that make you feel alive and like you're seen and you are part of a painting. It's just special. And at McCallican Canyon, my soul found itself at the edge of the stage, waiting for that first mariachi note. And I was in a complete catatonic state. I said to myself, well, if dance doesn't work out, I know that a cemetery would be so happy to have me as a statue, because I can do a good job at that. And my eyes were closed, and I was trembling, and I was wondering to myself, how did I get into this? Because the dress I was wearing, that Jalisco maroon dress, was heavy. Folclorico dancers don't need no gym. That's 5 pounds of fabric on one hand, 5 pounds on the other, and it's heavy. Plus, those earrings, those gold dangly earrings that are just uncomfortable to wear. And those eyelashes that just weigh on your eyes, because how dare you not open your eyes when you're dancing? So everything felt heavy and uncomfortable. And I just felt like I was inadequate. And to my luck, my eyes were closed. And then I felt a tap on my shoulder. I turned and I looked down. And it was my director, the scary, scary Latina woman with the weight of the world in her back. She could move mountains. I swear she could. And she's like yay high. I'm not that tall. But she's like yay high, but she seemed like pretty tall. So I looked down at her and I was like, yes. And she said, those things you have on, you gotta take them off. I can't let you dance with glasses. And I just stared at her. I was like, excuse me, come again, please. She's like, yes, you can give them to me or to another one of your fellow dancers, but I can't let you go on stage with those. And because I wanted to live and I was terrified of her, I said, okay. And with trembling hands, I took my glasses off and I gave them to her. And my world immediately turned blurry. I could not see 10 centimeters in front of me. So yay me. We got in line before that last song, El Son de la Negra. And I was nervous. I was shaking and I couldn't see again. Everything was blurry. I heard the first notes of the mariachi. Bam, ba-dam. And I got my preparada position and I went out on stage, maybe following the dancers in front of me, or maybe the Holy Spirit itself was guiding me. But somehow, someway, I made it on stage. And once on stage, I started dancing and jumping. And those guachapeados and zapateados and ticas that once seemed so hard just flowed. And I was not dancing alone. Yes, sure, there were people next to me. Yes, sure, my fellow dancers were doing an amazing job. But there was more. Those who had come before me were standing right beside me. The generations of Mexicanidad that had come before me were at that stage. My family, historical figures, all of those people who had crossed the border were there. And I felt powerful. Something that only that stage at that desert and wearing that dress could give me. So I kept on dancing. And the song was about to end. And I told myself, oh, you almost got it. You're almost there. All you need are those vueltas de plato. And those vueltas de plato are magical because they make you feel large and strong and big. And you feel like an eagle. And everything just turns to dust as you're turning. And I had to do 8 of them. 8 vueltas de plato. Easy. So I prepared myself. Did 1, 2, and I started spinning. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh my goodness, I was feeling myself. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and the music stops and everybody claps and the audience rises and cheers. And I kind of try to open my eyes with the blurry stuff that I see. And I look around and I had not moved an inch. Everybody else around me was where they were supposed to be, but I had not moved. So I just looked to my left and I looked to my right. And all of the dancers come closer to me. Somebody does the closing, bum, bum. We close our skirts, we bow, and leave that stage with a smile. Nobody knew that something had gone wrong. Nobody knew that something had happened. And as I was exiting that stage, I didn't feel angry. I didn't feel sad. I didn't feel enraged or disappointed at myself. That dress that was once so, so heavy on my shoulders was still heavy. Oh, don't get me wrong. I was tired. But I could carry the weight of the world because I was no longer carrying it alone. I was an embajadora of my culture. I was an embajadora of Mexicanidad. And as I was taking my makeup off, I recognized myself. I saw the person on that mirror, and I was happy to see her. And at that moment, Celeste was born. Now, Celeste is me. She really isn't me. But Celeste accompanies me every day. She gives me voice. She's colorful and she's loud. And whenever I'm doubting myself, she tells me, Fer, what are we really doing here? Thank you.
That's it for the Worth Repeating podcast. Do us a favor and give us a like, subscribe, or review us wherever you stream podcasts. Worth Repeating returns this fall. Do you have a theme suggestion? Interested in joining the storyboard? Or maybe you just want to give us our flowers? I'd love to hear from you. Shoot me an email at worthrepeating@tpr.org. Support for Worth Repeating comes from the 8020 Foundation, Lifshutz Foundation, and Pasha Mediterranean Grill. Worth Repeating is a production of Texas Public Radio. I'm Tori Poole. Thanks for listening.